Omaha Public Radio presents another lecture program from Creighton University on Noon Forum. We'll hear a talk by Olga Lagotska, associate professor at Moscow State University. She'll speak on the topic, Russian Global Engagement on Education and Business. This program, part of the 11th Asian Culture Week, presented annually by the Asian World Center at Creighton University, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, October 29, 2015, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of Creighton University, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Patrick Murray, professor of philosophy at Creighton University and holder of the John C. Kenefick Faculty Chair in the Humanities, co-sponsor of Dr. Lagotska's lecture.
We're going to hear this afternoon from Dr. Olga Lagotska. She currently serves as the Chair of International Organizations and World Political Processes at the School of Politics there at Moscow State University. She served also as the Chair of Area Studies and International Relations in the Department of Foreign and International Relations. So I'd like us all to welcome Dr. Lagotska to speak on Russian global engagement on education and business. Welcome.
So I have an eternal topic that Jiang Marong tried to introduce to me, Russian global engagement on education and business. So I'll try just to focus on some points and to underline what is special about Russian, first of all, university education within the process of globalization. The questions that could be raised, how common is higher education in different countries? And what economic theories indicate it is a source of public good? And how to change the role of education in the modern world? And practically lately, it is highly believed that education is the resource of development with which a society has obtained. And the more education you have, the better. Among my generation in Russia, those who are in their 50s, early 50s or late 40s, they obtained, of course, after the Soviet education during these years, they obtained the second education. Because the young generation is just chasing you, they are following you, and so you have to be very well educated to occupy high rank positions in the Russian society. That's interesting that practically Russians, when they put aside the Marxist theory together with the model of communism, they somehow forgot about the real proactive ideas of Karl Marx, because Marx says that the source of social wealth is not money, is free time. It's a free time that you could use for the benefit of yourself, for the benefit of the society. I was really amazed when I was in France back in 2001 and 2002 and saw the demonstrations with the slogans for 35 hours working day, a working week. And I thought my first reaction, it's insane. For so many decades, back in 19th century, the people were struggling for 40-hour week working day, working week. And now to seek for 35. And so, of course, I posed the question, what's the reason for it? And the answer was very good. We want not to be only workaholics. We want to have our free time and enjoy this free time. But if to be realist, at that time, there were already a few members of Eastern Europe, members of the European Union. And their people was ready to work 40-hour working week. And, of course, French people were in danger to lose their positions because the newcomers would work 40, 50, whatever, just for higher salary. But anyway, I think we can't disagree with Marx's thesis that the source of social wealth is really to have free time. And so the society works to produce this benefit, but doesn't use it very well, this benefit of free time. Elfin Toffler says that the source of social wealth is information. And indeed, information plays a huge role now in contemporary world society. We now, for example, perceive banks not only as a source of capital or a source of investments, but a source of information, because they make their own estimation where to involve money or to provide to the citizens and get their extra money to the bank. So practical education is now as valuable as an activity that allows us, on the one hand, accumulate information, and on the other hand, manage information, search for it and use it. For example, to improve our own abilities and skills, to follow our own development, to follow economic development, or to realize the projects, and to do many, many things in this world. We can name perhaps only one country that really builds an economy based on knowledge. And this is the country you live in. This is the United States of America. It's till now the only one country where the economy is based on knowledge. The United States were the first to enter the era of the service economy, and now they are the first to enter the era of economy based on knowledge. Referring manufacturing to China, Malaysia, Philippines, and other developing countries, the USA focused its attention on production of technologies, and then they sell technologies to the other countries. If we compare two systems of education, that's interesting too. Anglo-Saxon system of education and German, French, Russian systems of education. There are two different systems. And if we refer to German, French, Russian school, it was built on the deductive methods, going from the general to the particular. That's why in Russian mentality, when the scientists refer to each other, the main question is, do you understand me? Do you understand the whole topic I'm describing? And practically, that was the sense of this system. If we speak about the Anglo-Saxon system of education, it has been forefront, and all the others are trying to catch it. It goes from the other side, from the particular things, and then accumulating particular things, you create a new product, something new. So now I would like to focus my attention, after this little bit long introduction, referring to comparison of higher education back in the Soviet Union and modern Russia. And they differ greatly because there's completely different patterns of development. Practically, in my opinion, one of the great reasons why the Soviet Union was dismantled, and it wasn't a chaotic process from the bottom, it was a very well reasonably organized process from above in 1991. One of the reasons why it split was the education system. Practically, the Soviet system of higher education, as it was at the start of the market reforms, did not reflect the necessities of the new stage of development. And if we refer to the Soviet system, there were three key principles of education: universality, gratuity, and fundamental education. And I received this education from elementary, secondary, high school, and university, Moscow State University, so I don't judge from some foreign words, but on my own experience. In practice, what could I say? That if we gather now together, those who graduated from my department, history department, back in 1983, among 200 students, you wouldn't find a lot of historians left. But people having this fundamental education, this wonderful basic knowledge, could obtain the second education in business, in financing, in tourism, whatever. Practically all my student mates now, they are general directors of the companies, financial directors, owners, and so on and so forth. And if they had to apologize, for example, obtaining the economic education, and they had to write the diploma for the second education, and they apologized, sorry, we have graduated from the history department, the answer was always, don't excuse. That's a wonderful diploma, a wonderful base. So that's why now entering the globalization process, it's very contradictory to Russians and to Russian, especially older generation. Because with the new system I will dwell upon very soon, Bolognian system that Russia entered, trying to catch European Union, has very contradictory results on the Russian soil. And it's so chaotically organized, it's so partly presented that practically during the last 20 years with this, especially 10 last years of Bolognian system, we lost this fundamental base. We lost the school of analysis, we lost this legacy of the schools. And that's bad because I have just told you that you could twist yourself on this basic knowledge and obtain another profession. But now my students, it's only very capable of them could do it. Recently I gave the recommendation to one of my students, but I passed him all the steps of the hell, so to say. He was conducting the role-playing, he was conducting discussions, he wrote a lot of analytical papers before I gave him the recommendation to London Business School. And he was so amazed by the recommendation because he told me, professor's recommendation to Nobel Award. I said, okay, this is a preliminary recommendation. Now he's studying London Business School and I'm monitoring what he's doing there. I said, you have to keep my name clean. You have to study well there. And then I have, a line of students who wanted to obtain the same recommendations, but my answer was, thank you, I'm busy. Because not only really elite students could have these recommendations because they have to obtain a lot of experience in studies, in writing, in debating before they could enter the highest level. So returning to the Soviet system, fundamental knowledge was not bad. Universality, good too, just if we understand the principle. When I was a student, they tried to provide us all amount of data and information. Could you imagine all the information about history? It was always overwhelming. So it wasn't a choice. There were no criteria for the questions where I can get the information, what kind of information I would love to get. Of course, there was no internet. We worked in the libraries from early morning till the libraries were closed. And unfortunately, the Russian libraries, they don't work like UNO library till midnight. Thank you for the United States of America. Our libraries, they were closed at 10 p.m. So it was the last hour we sat. We have our private life in the libraries. We didn't have any free time besides that. So really it needed to be reformed because you can't obtain with the development of mankind, you can't obtain the whole amount of information. You have to make a search and to pose the correct questions. So the search system had to be, of course, reformed. It was highly specialized. It was focusing on technical specialties, most of all, because the military-industrial complex was mostly developed in the Soviet time. You could read any CIA data, and they would provide you 17% of budget was spent on military affairs. Don't believe it. 80%. Just this, where it was hidden information. So the Soviet system was focused on the hard competitive selection. I remember to enter the history department of Moscow State University, I had to pass the entrance exams, and the competition was 20 to 1. So I had to overcome 18 people to enter the university. That's why practically we didn't have weak students at that time. And vice versa is now. If I find from 150 students 20, 30 that are really capable, I would be very pleased. And the problem is of the reform that I will discuss very soon. So when the leading universities provided in Soviet time a very good basic and special education for 5 years in turn, there was no splitting into systems on bachelor and master, and was a specialist for 5 years. And especially what was good of it, that we had such a good education in your high school, that when we entered our special departments, we did not study the other subjects except for the subjects that we need for our profession. So we did not lose the first year for general education. Now we have to do it. You know, it's a disaster when our students now enter the first year. We have to, you know, my first slogan where I address to the students, freshmen, forget everything you studied in high school. Listen to me. That's a disaster of the new reform. It's, there are a lot of pros and cons. And, of course, there was an emphasis on the preparation during the Soviet time on the main cog in a big state-planned economy, because the slogan was, don't go out of the crowd, stay within. And this is very typical not only for Russia, I guess, junkets for China as well. For every country which you were, you have a very great role of state in the economy, in studies, in everything. Even they could interfere into your private life. And of course, during the Soviet time, there were very little professionals demanded for market economy, financiers, lawyers, organizers of production. Let's focus now on the basic trends in the modern system of Russian higher education as they have developed in connection with the market transformation in Russia. And Russia is passing for the last 25 years very complicated, very difficult transitional period from the communist state-oriented pattern of development, which was practically ruined, first of all, by economic reasons, to the free market society, still with a huge role of state. I would just underline a few eight moments in these reformers' process. Of course, the first one is the explosive increase in demand for higher education, which in market economy could not find an adequate response. There were no adequate specialists for the market economy, of course, under the Soviet, after the Soviet Union split. And practically, if the first half of 1990s we had really a collapse with the high school because nobody wanted to go there, they had to go to the open markets to sell food, the people with university education, because we should survive. There was enough money only for food, nothing else, even not to pay communities. I don't speak about other things. So in the middle of 1990s, it was a dramatic change. People began, young generation began to go to the universities. And since the middle of 1990s, practically is the great interest to university education. And of course, with such a great interest, the university that used to be quite elitarian, like Moscow State University, you see, only one from 20 could be a student. And there were not enough universities all over the country. Now there was a demand to create a lot of universities, but if you have to create it like immediately, a SAP, it means that you'll have troubles with the professor staff, of course, with material base, with financial base, with everything. The second trend is that changes in the structure of specialties toward the needs of a post-industrial economy in contrast to the industrial economy. And first of all, increasing the share of humanitarian economic specialties, as well as the emergence of a new specialties that Soviet Union did not produce. For example, marketing, hotel and tourist business, management innovation, financial markets, and so on. You know, I would just show you a very well-understandable example or case study with the situation with the engineers. It's quite indicative. Russia leads, till now, the world in producing so-called old-style engineers, so that could work only in industrial economy, not non-post-industrial economy. And that is not useful at all in an innovative economy. As a result, they will shift after this training, and the training of this engineer will be just idle, and it further reduces the prestige of their work. And you know, I saw the new building for engineering, and a lot of students from India, for example, that studied there. In Russia, we don't have such a material base still, even in my Moscow State University, as the UNO has, and I'm pretty sure Ukraine has. And this is one of the tasks of contemporary Russia to change the engineering education. The trend number three. The explosive increase in demand for higher education has coincided with the sharp downturn in the economy that occurred in early 1990s because of the split of the USSR, the Soviet Union, and entering into a completely different pattern of development. Practically, there were the severe cuts in budget findings, and before, all the higher university education was free of charge. It was under the state budget. And besides the cut in the budgets, the amount of students really increased. And this phenomenon has given rise to private universities working entirely on a fee basis and provided services of different quality. And many times these private universities do not provide high quality education. For example, my student from the state university, like your public university, now can go to the private university and obtain the evaluation much higher than I provide to him or to her. It doesn't mean at all that I am biased. It does mean that they need money. So if he or she pays, so they would raise her evaluation or his evaluation. And of course it's confusing for students because they don't understand where they are. Practically, since 2003, Russia, at that time, was the first presidency of Vladimir Putin, still was looking to the West. And Russia, at that time, proposed both to the European Union and to NATO to let Russia enter. And both organizations rejected. You see, now we have a clash in between NATO and Russia. But Putin proposed back in 2002, and both organizations were shocked. If you look at the map, what's Russia by territory? What's European Union? And the same with NATO. But theoretically, Russia filled the criteria to enter. It was constructing the free market society already, no communism. It respected human values, and it was constructing democracy. So there are no barriers to enter these organizations. But of course, it was the negative answer. And basically, 1990s, Russia had to survive by itself. There were no Western investments, a lot, nothing. And practically in global policy, there are no friends. And so just the West was observing Russia as former superpower, just weak. If it recovers, recovers. If not, who cares? Yeah, they care because Russia has the nuclear weapon. They care about that not to spread nuclear weapon because of the poverty. And so Russia, of course, was very much Russian people offended that they tried to embrace the Western civilization, but it didn't answer this embrace. And so Russia still wanted to participate in the educative process of so-called Bologna system. Bologna is one of the towns in Italy. And so now there are 49 countries, members of this system. It's an educative reform system. And Russia entered 4 years after it was created. It was created in 1999, and so Russia entered in 2003. And practically, what are the basic principles of this system? To promote mobility by overcoming obstacles to the effective exercise of free movement. Meaning that Russian student could start the bachelor education in Russia and continue this education in the United States, in China, in any European country. So it's from, liberalizing labor force. You can go and study wherever you want. And my students now, they study in the United States. Most of all, I don't know why in California. I would like them to invite to Omaha. I really love Omaha very much. To your university or to you, no? It's not so fancy, perhaps, than California, but very well placed and very well done. So practically, Russia followed this credit system, splitting these 5 years of education in two levels, bachelor education and master education. But the problem was that the Bolognian system is created for Europeans. And practically what happens that copying these principles of Bologna system to create this international educative space, Russia not being the member of European Union, the Russian students can't have legally the same diplomas at the end as the European countries. So they won't be legally praised in Europe. And vice versa, the European diplomas wouldn't be legally praised in Russia just because we are not members of the same organization. It wasn't thought because of that. And taking into account that the reform touched not only the higher education, university education, but the secondary high school, they followed the worst experience. I would underline the worst experience of the United States of America, but lately the newer. They introduced the multiple choices instead of the exams. In multiple choices, they don't ask you to think. They ask you to learn by heart the results, but not the process, how these results are gotten, okay? And so that's why now practically our students from high school before entering university, they don't think about professions, about what they would choose, but they think to obtain by any means the highest percentage in this multiple choice final exam. They have now lack of abilities to speak, to debate, to write the papers. They have this chaotic knowledge of everything, parts of everything. And of course, when they enter university, like my university, we have troubles. Moscow State University has a special status. It's a federal university, as well as the St. Petersburg, two capitals, we call them. And we were the last to surrender to this system of multiple choice test program to enter the universities. And we could push our own internal exam for those who want to enter our university. And very soon, in a year, this exam converted not in multiple choice, but two questions that you have to dwell upon as the long essay. And it was a very difficult task for the candidates to the university. But at the same time, we still lose, of course, the first year of studies now to accommodate the students to the university level, not to the high school level. And we lose this year. And take into account that in America you study 12 years. In Russia it's 11. So practically the school never, for many years or decades, the high school never prepared for entrance exams to universities. Now it's even worse. And I'm pretty aware that if you want to enter to prestigious American universities, you have to pass not only the multiple choices test, but you have to present essays, you have to participate in oral examinations. And that is the competition. What's the perception of Bologna system in Russia? Our rector, our chancellor of Moscow State University says, Russia will prepare the workers for the laboratories in the West, meaning this will provide very low-level educated students. Especially bachelor, it's just, you know, the first step. You have to go to the master, of course. The other replic, hidden transition to paid education. You know, I was really amazed. I mean, I have all the students here who pay for the education. It doesn't matter, you're in Creighton, the amount of payment matters, or you know. And I thought, what's the difference? Why in America I don't have problems with attendance the class, with being responsible for the class? In Russia I have these troubles. For example, my new department of School of World Politics is brand new. It was created in 2003. We have 150 positions for students, only 13 budget places. What's budget places? They don't pay for tuition. State pays instead of them. Okay? So it's really competition, 13 out of 150. But when I go to the lecture, I could see not 150 students, but 40, 50, maximum 80. I began to check them. Then they began to come, everybody, but they're playing games or chatting. Oh, that's wonderful. They're chatting, this Russian speaking. That's why I have such a voice. And so I was just wondering, you know, what's the answer? The problem is that who pays for the education? In Russia, parents. So kids, they don't care. Parents pay. So I'm not responsible. I'm a kid. I could do whatever I want. I was really amazed when one student was passing my not very difficult subjects, international organizations, for the fifth attempt already. And at that time, his 7 million rubles car was stolen. Did he earn this money? No. I would like to address to his dad. What is he doing with his son? Yeah, so this is the reason why there is no responsibility, because here you take yourself. And I know a lot of American students who are the first to take the university education of their families. They took themselves the loans, and they know how to pay, how diminish the loans, and so on and so forth, and they work. Russians prefer to be lazy, especially if parents could pay. So this is the trouble, too. So it's not hidden transition to the paid education. It's how it's organized, once again. By the way, this Bologna system is not so strict in many countries in Europe. For example, Germany tries to avoid it. Germany used to have a free-of-charge university system. Now you have to pay, but they still stay for individual programs for each university. And Italy itself, 5 years ago, Bologna is in Italy, rejected the Bologna system. They returned to the special education for 5 years with a real specialized education. The next opinion, one of the chancellor of the other university. If there are the rules of the road, there are the rules of the road for everybody. So if there is Bologna system, you have to follow it. That's all. It's a kind of a cold-minded opinion, But you have to have in mind the peculiarities of national traditions, national economy, national mentality in each country. It doesn't fit to everybody. Then, there is a danger of kind of a clip culture in which everything can be replaced, modified, transferred to the process of acquiring knowledge, and it doesn't provide you real basic education, then you could use the pros of Bologna system. For example, you could graduate from School of World Politics as bachelor and go to economic department as master. So you'll be multi-sided specialist. But you have to work hard in every step. So that's practically what I wanted to introduce to you, because it's a huge topic. If you have any questions, you're very welcome to ask me. And I'll try to answer.
I think to the interest of our students and as, you know, also our faculties, I would like to pose a question in a very competitive way. Having myself being a teacher in high school and in universities in China, I'm now teaching in the United States, I constantly compare my American students with those in China. And I honestly, I love both of them. Because
Me too.
But I do notice there's a lot of differences between the American students and the Chinese students. Mm-hmm. And I also had a privilege of attending some classes in Japan and in Germany. And I noticed that the attitude towards teaching, towards the faculties who are the instructors, are quite varied from one another. How do the Russian students think of their learning from their own teachers who are Russians and learning from teachers who come from other countries? Do they feel it's an opportunity to see this instructor as a bridge across the different culture, or do they challenge a lot about what you say about Russia? Because when I teach a course or a class in China regarding some sensitive issues, I got to be very careful. Do Russian professors have this concern when they teach in the United States such as you do, or do American teachers have any concern in teaching Russian students in terms of any issues?
Yeah, well, thank you for this question. Yeah, you know, once again, I want to underline that I just like to teach, so I love students both American in America, multinational audience, and in Russia. I don't like lazy students. That I don't like, definitely. And in America, you don't have problems with copying while the exam. In Russia, you do. And Americans never talk, as I told, during the class. Russians are talking. Yeah, but speaking seriously, it depends on what where your university is situated. Russia is very still enclave developed. So if we talk about 12 cities in the Russian Federation who have multi-million population, and of course they have several universities in each of these cities, I'm pretty sure the situation is the same as in Moscow State University. No, now we are not under any censorship. We can provide our ideas, but we should be just professional when we present our ideas to the students. And the students are open to the world. We have many, many guests from European countries, professors of different orientations, American, coming by Fulbright, for example, from UNO even, there was one. Now he's a retired professor, and he went in the early 1990s. So no, you know, Moscow State University is very special. We'll call it a kind of a liberal values university. So the only one thing is just to be professional. But sometimes when my boss is very angry, he could name some of the national leader quite critically. like I could do too. For example, we were just joking, but no, not to maim our prime minister now, but it was former Russian president Dmitry Medvedev. I call him a Twitter boy because I don't respect him at all. And not only me, nobody respected, because he's a replica of Putin. You know, I don't like any replicas. Better be original, okay? Because original, this is who you are. In America, it's very good to admit people whom they are. But so it's not a problem. For example, I work and I definitely share not nationalist views. And my students are open to this stuff. Not all the universities are like this. If you go to the countryside, especially if you want the Fulbright Award, for example, many of my colleagues, they complained that after they returned from the United States, they are blamed, they are bought by Americans. Could you imagine? Bought. Because they try to be multi-sided and explain what's real about the United States. But I would like to underline, you know, Jiang, it's the idea that appeared only now in my head. Even with the removing Iron Curtain both from China and Russia, how many people could really visit the United States and stay here not as a tourist 1 week, yeah, or on some conference 1 week, but living at least half a year like I stay with the semester, to know from inside how it works. And I would say that only 10% of Russian population during this 25 years after the split of the USSR could go abroad, could afford themselves. And if they go abroad, most of all it's Turkey, it's Bulgaria, it's something near for tourist purposes. So it's very easy to make any propaganda in such a society because they don't know reality. And if I tell to my students, there are two Americas, okay? There is America for Americans, and there is global America. And don't judge by global America. In global policy, there are no friends. Everybody's enemy. Everybody. It doesn't matter, nation, nationality, whatever. Because everybody pursues selfish interests. That's all. But, so, practically, I hope I answered your question. So universities, they have, and Putin, with all the criticism now, he doesn't touch universities because he understands that better to have the opposition that you can see and hear than to put it into clandestine. But of course, I mean, no, I can criticize every country. I can criticize the politics of the Russian government. I think it's more liberal than in China, because China has much more stricter control over the society. But it's in Moscow, and once again, underline in 12 multi-million cities. If you go to a smaller place, then you have more intrigues, you have more conservatism. So you can't deny it. Enclave development. The same as China. Enclave development. Yeah. But here what I admire about from my multinational audience here, that it was very difficult. Now I teach international relations. And of course they think that if I'm from Russia, I am pro-Russian. It's so logical from their standpoint. I said, no, I'm not pro-Russian, I'm professional. And especially, I am a lady, by the way, I am mother, by the way. I have 18 years old guy, my son, so I'm against all the wars, personally. I teach you just professional knowledge. And we read the John Mearsheimer, the head of the Realist School article from Chicago Northern University. And this article is very famous. And he's a very famous professor. The name of the article is why the USA and NATO failed in Ukraine, and the frustration of liberal illusions in Ukraine. And he claims, not being Slavophile or Russophile, never, he claims that Putin was defensive because NATO was on the national borders. And he claims that, try to imagine, sorry, Jiang, that China interferes into Canada or Mexico. What would be the United States' reaction? Kick out. Because you are on our borders. So why the Russian reaction should be different? But I have military guys. You know that in Omaha you have a strong military aviation base. And they, three of them under McCain influence. Could you imagine? And so it took me a while to persuade them that not NATO is not preserving peace in the world. Nobody gave the legal right for NATO to do it. You know, yes, United Nations Organization, but not NATO. If it does it, it has a special content, this politics, special aims, but it could be covered with very good ideas. So, you know, when we tried to read this article, to find all the layers of analysis, it was very difficult for them. But now they wrote the first exam, and all these military guys received A's because they had to read thoroughly, and then they twist their mind, and at least I said, hooray. They understood that the image of the world is multi-sided. That's the goal of my teaching. I see myself as a bridge, like you see, as a bridge in between Russia and America. I try to withdraw the myths about America and Russia. I hate this, I call it dinosaur anti-Americanism, because it's not about America, it's about the global policy, okay? And here I tried to withdraw the anti-Russianness. You remember the Global Studies Conference, and it was just awful.
Thank you, Professor, for your talk. I was actually quite intrigued by how the educational systems in Europe had gotten so different, especially because a lot of the monarchies were related, so you'd think they might have adopted similar educational systems over the period of time, and obviously there might be some difference from the Napoleonic system because of the monarchies being opposed to them. But I was just curious if there's is there maybe some historical problems that have caused the educational systems to be so different from each other, and are those stigmas still alive today, and is that the reason why there hasn't been more of a molding of all of these educational systems? I'm just wondering if you had any thoughts.
Yeah, of course, education is very much tied with mentality and with the historic traditions. That's for sure. And practically, if to ask me, I would not ruin the Soviet system. I would modernize it, because now we'll go back, but with so many victims on the road. Because now we have the new generation. They are freer in taking care about different digital devices, that's for sure. But they don't have this wide horizon of knowledge. And they make a lot of mistakes even when they are trying to pass the interview and write the papers in Russian language. It never happened so before. So before you ruin, better to think, we have the proverb, think seven times before you cut. So, and just because you obtained, I didn't provide you the figures, the first International Monetary Fund gave $30 million and then $60 million for this reform to Russia. But of course with the preconditions. And if you took money, so you have to respond. But the problem is that this is your country, and you have to respond very cautiously to the newcomers. Because, as I told, all over the world now, people try to reach the Anglo-Saxon school, but you have different mentality since you were born. I remember my son back in 2007, I'm the 14th time here, he was studying American school, and I was really amazed by the maths tasks he had to solve. I had to address to my host family, because mentality is different. If you don't return the book to the library, what would it be? In Russia, punishment. In America, something different. My son, he loved the tasks like, you have $1, you can buy or banana or ice cream or chewing gum. He has to calculate, but he knows what's banana. In Russian, they are too academic, these tasks. They are like, if you plant 1,000 tons of corn, he has never seen, for example, corn and how it's planted, okay? So, of course, the children, they lose their focus. And that amazed me, because American mentality is very rational and close down to the earth. In German, Russian system is based on more, how to say, Greek mentality, observing mentality, you know, kind of romantic mentality. They are slow. They are not rational in their life very much. And so all of a sudden, when you break this system and you start something new, you should be really ready. That's why we have very contradictory approach. If you ask personally me, I'm against this system, completely against. Once again, I would modernize it because, of course, you see, for example, I travel back and forth. So I follow the main trends, and the students, they like my lectures because I'm involved, I present the up-to-date knowledge. I always update the knowledge, and I know what's going on in the world. But many professors could be quite conservative and stay with the... You should not... You know, it's a kind of a prejudice. The teachers, they teach the same all their life. It's crazy. I teach two courses for two different... One, the same course to different semesters, I would change. Because everything is going. The last news I wanted you to present, 27th of October. Today is the 29th. 2 days ago, there was a global BRICS meeting. BRICS is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South African Republic. And it was a global educative project. Now they want to have 10 best universities from each of these five countries and make a kind of the unique space for these universities to promote innovation programs. So you see, it's just 2 days ago. It goes further and further. So, of course, we have to exchange a lot, much more. Then we will not have such misperception of each other. What I hate is misperception, of course. And I would like to stop Syrian crisis and Ukrainian crisis. Just leave people alone. Americans shouldn't be very fast. And you are. In global policy. And when you are fast, I always tell to my students, imagine the conversation with your parents. It doesn't matter if you're Chinese or American. And they just lived longer. They are more experienced. They want to give you a piece of advice, but you are not ready. What you are telling them, leave me in peace. Don't touch me. In 10 or 15 years, they will reach your wisdom, but they will make their own mistakes. They will find their own way. You can't push them. The same with the societies. Of course, the Russian-Chinese alliance is very temporary. Very different countries. And we used to joke that it's very good to be Chinese now. You are sitting on the Great Wall, looking in Russia, saying, hello, Russia. Yeah, we need your oil. But now you will construct hundreds of thousands of miles of pipes before we'll buy your oil. And we know quite well that Russia doesn't have money for these pipes. So China is enjoying this situation, of course. And Russia has nowhere to go, except for the polar bears. Not to the West, neither to the East, just to China.
So I was just curious if you could talk a little bit more about the role that government plays in education mm-hmm. over in Russia as compared to the U.S., and then maybe compare it back to the old Soviet Union as well.
Okay, yeah, thank you for this question. So in Soviet Union, it was 100% state control. And it was free of charge, I told you. There was the unique program for all the universities. Just it depends most of all on the professor's staff. Of course, the best were in the best universities. State divides universities into different groups. The special group are so-called federal universities. There are only two universities, federal, under state control. These are Moscow State University and St. Petersburg. There are two capitals called, because they were, during centuries, either or the capital of Russia. And what does it mean? It doesn't mean 100% of state control as back in the Soviet Union. It just means that, for example, both universities, they don't participate in Bologna process. They have this right. They let us, two universities, to introduce internal exam, not only this multiple choice from the high school. They let us to be more flexible with the programs of bachelor degree and master degree. We have much more exchange programs than the other universities. And we have a special line in budget for our development. They don't touch the money. We still have a lot of paid students, and this amount is enlarging and enlarging. Then we have innovative universities. This is the second group. It's, for example, very famous business school in Skolkovo. It's in the suburbs of Moscow. And it has a special status, this school. In general, we have, I guess I found it, in general, we have about 113 business schools in general in Russia now, and the top are 10, including Skolkovo. And by the way, the price to study there is very expensive. It's very expensive. Then we have the regional universities, because Russia is very much divided in, by regions. I told you, it's enclave developed. And they have their special peculiarities, especially taking into account that Russia still is, the Soviet Union was multinational, and Russia is multinational. We have more than 100 nations and nationalities. So practically, we try to support, this is the unique Russian experience. For centuries, we used to live beside each other, and the nationalities, they practice their own languages, their own traditions, their own culture. And nobody would tell you from these small areas that they are Russians. No, they are Kabardins, they are Kalmyks, they are who they are. It's not like American pot that you have here, melting pot. Yeah, so we have regional universities, and they have to be subsidized by the regional authorities, of course. Then besides this university system, we have private universities. Private universities, they could be they could be in consortium with some huge enterprises. And so practically these enterprises are preparing the working labor force for themselves. Like Rus-El, for example, it's Russian aluminium, huge company. They had a special program for students. But a lot of representatives of great entrepreneurs, I wouldn't call them oligarchs. It's kind of a propaganda style. They're not oligarchs, especially if we refer to the term oligarchs, they rule. It's a group who rules. They don't rule. They have money, and they have their business well created and developed. They try to support universities with creative part of students, and they try to put the emphasis on the those who are their A's and B's. They provide them the scholarships, they provide them the business trainings, then they provide them the practice. After that, they take them to their companies, to their enterprises. So just different approaches.
Please help me.
You've been listening to a lecture program from Creighton University on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Olga Lagotska, associate professor at Moscow State University. She spoke on the topic Russian Global Engagement on Education and Business. This program, part of the 11th Asian Culture Week, presented annually by the Asian World Center at Creighton University, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, October 29th, 2015, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Cindy Workman, Director of Public Relations at Creighton University, and to Maorang Zhang, the Director of the Asian World Center, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 500 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.